Welcome to the Classic Rock Show on Huntley Community Radio, 101.5 FM. I am still Jim Samaria.
And I'm your co-host, Mark Plotnick. For 1 hour each week, we will bring you music, backstories, and interviews from the most prolific era for rock and roll, the 1950s through the early 1980s.
Mark and I are authors of that wonderful, great book, Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, which is available at the Illinois Rock and Roll Museum, as well as Blue Village Vinyl in Westmont. Also other places. Our book features my photography of artists from 1973 to present day with words by that piano-playing rock historian, the swashbuckling Mark Plotnick.
Yes, Errol Flynn and I have so much in common. In any case, we are thrilled we have three great musicians in the studio today. They are guitarist and vocalist Mike Flynn, bassist vocalist Jerry Smith, and saxophonist,
flutist,
Quint Lang. These gentlemen have played in some very special Chicago area bands going back to the 1960s.
And currently, all three are together in the band Dinosaur Exhibit. Prior to the pandemic, they opened for Steely Dan at a packed Ravinia concert and more recently played at Hey Nannies in Arlington Heights. With the return of live music, it was a pleasure to hear a great band who knows how to perform live.
And speaking of that Ravinia show, my wife and I were sitting next to a couple from Scotland. They had made it a point to attend the show because they remember the Flock playing Europe in the early 1970s, and I guess you'd call them Flockheads.
Yeah, today we hope these guys will enlighten us about the Chicago area music scene as well as their own experiences, which, don't forget, guys, got to keep it clean, okay?
No problem. That's right. So, without further ado, it's time to introduce our guests in alphabetical order. Mike Flynn, Quint Lang, and Jerry Smith. CGM College paid off.
Yeah, very good. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Nice to be here.
All right, we're going to start off with Jerry Smith. You were an original member of the Flock, and actually you played my high school, and I remember the state.
I remember Mark.
Yeah, March 15th.
He was one of the first row headbangers, right? Yeah.
March 15th, 1968. And my senior yearbook has photos of the band and alum Fred Glickstein. Or is it Glickstein?
Steen Award.
Okay.
Glickstein.
Good. I also grew up down the block from some of these guys, including Jerry Goodman. So, Jerry, tell us how the Flock came together.
I'll give you the shortest version I possibly can. So we were influenced by, of course, the Beatles back in the mid-60s. The Beatles, the Rolling Stones, this new kind of phenomenon was hitting. And I was a guitar player. Not a great guitar player, but I was a guitar player, and I sang, and I put together a group for a talent show. I went to Niles North High School, and in the audience was a former girlfriend of Rick Canoff, and you know who Rick Canoff was. Yeah, he had a group called The Exclusives, of which Fred was a part of, a couple other guys, and she knew that The Exclusive was looking, they were looking for a singer bass player. And she thought I could fill the bill. So I went out to Rick Canoff's home in Rogers Park, and I auditioned. And I said, you know, I'm not a bass player, I'm a guitar player. Well, you got to hear these two guys. Okay, I did, and they were phenomenal guitar players. I said, all right, I'm going to learn to play bass. I never picked up a bass in my life. And again, I'm like 17 years old, right? So back then in the mid-60s, you had teen clubs on every corner, in every suburb, in Chicago, and The Exclusives were working at that time. Soon after I joined, we changed the name to The Flock, and then we brought in the horn section that was with 4 Days and a Night, and we played a lot of teen clubs. Jerry Goodman was a year younger than us and was our roadie.
Right.
He actually was a great guitar player. And of course, he's a classically trained violinist whose parents were first and second chair in the Chicago Symphony.
That's right.
He comes from a huge musical family, but violin. So one night, one of our guitar players was ill. We were going to cancel a gig. And Jerry says, I know all your songs. Let's get up there and play. No problem. So we did that. And he was, frankly, great. I mean, he was great. Plus, he could sing backup. So we got Jerry in the group. And immediately we said, you know, let's try violin. Of course, Jerry said, there's no violin in rock music. I said, let's just try it. We bought a DeArmond pickup, ran it through a wah-wah pedal into an amplifier, and his knowledge of the guitar transformed his classically trained being into this phenomenal musician. And we just started getting the musical juices flowing. And then the flock went into a whole new different direction.
And just quickly, did you guys release any singles back then?
We did. We were on USA Destination. And we had about five or six singles. We were managed by the same people that managed the Buckinghams and the Crying Shames. We all originally were on USA Destination.
Okay. All right, Jerry, John Mayall wrote some glowing liner notes for the Flock's debut album. Did you meet John Mayall, and tell us about your experiences touring Europe?
Yes, we met John Mayall, and he was very much instrumental in getting the Flock known, at least initially around the world. We were managed later in the year by Aaron Russo, who owned the Kinetic Playground. Right. Aaron was a 28-year-old entrepreneur that was a popular promoter in that you had Bill Graham on either coast.
Right.
You come through Chicago, you played at the Kinetic Playground. Aaron caught wind of what we were doing. We practiced every day at the Kinetic during the day. And he said, I'm going to put you on stage. When you're ready and you have 45 minutes of your own material, because we were transitioning into this avant-garde jazz rock type of band, very unique, he said, I will put you in any show that you would like to be part of. We were ready. We went down the playlist, and there was, you know, Jimi Hendrix and The Who and Led Zeppelin and Santana. And we saw John Mayall and Richie Havens. We did not want to get upstaged too much, right? So we thought, this might be a good show. We played a Friday and Saturday night. We got a standing ovation. And then, of course, Richie Havens and Mayall played. When Mayall went back to England, the British press was asking him, hey, what's going on in America? He said, I got to tell you, the best band I ever heard in the United States, this group called The Flock. Who's The Flock? I don't know. They were great. They played the Kinetic Playground. And from that, the record companies and the press started calling Aaron Russo, who then set up a showcase for record labels, and Columbia won out. We did tour with John in the States. We didn't tour with him in Europe, but we did do an East Coast tour. And so, and we went out to his Laurel Canyon home. Mm-hmm. He wrote the liner notes when we debuted at the Whiskey A Go-Go on the West Coast. And he sat in the audience and he wrote those glowing comments. And that was great.
Yeah, that's a great story. You guys started back in Chicago back in the 60s and 70s. Tell us a little bit about the music scene. It seems like all you guys are pals. And was it a friendly competition between your bands? Or, what was it like?
Well, I wouldn't call it a competition. There were places to play. We all played the same circuit. And if you look at any of the playbills, you'll see from the Mods and 4 Days and a Night, and everybody played the same venues. There were so many to play. So it was definitely a friendly environment. There's no doubt about it. Teen clubs were prevalent. Teenagers would either go to the movies or go see the groups and hang out on a Friday and Saturday night, and in the summertime during the week as well, drink a Coke, have a burger or whatever if they sold food. And that was the socialization back then that you really don't have today for young people.
Yeah, like I said, when I photographed the Cornerstone of Rock with the Buckinghams and Crying Shames, these guys all seem to really, really like each other. And, you guys, it's the same way. It's just a really cool thing that everyone was pulling for each other, all the Chicago bands.
We're all friends.
Yeah.
We still are.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And I think as people get older, there's more of an appreciation for life and for each other and what, everyone has done over the years. Hmm. Well, for our first song selection, we've chosen Clown by The Flock. It's also a dinosaur exhibit song that they play at every show. The song starts off with Jerry's punchy bass line. Let's listen.
You've been listening to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, 101.5 FM. Time for another question with our guests here, Mike Flynn, Quint Lang, and Jerry Smith. At one time or another, all three of you played in the Mods, a very popular Chicago area band that was formed way back in 1965. It was led by vocalist Jimmy Rogers, and the Mods became very famous with songs like Hold On, Knock on Wood, and Soul Drippin'. Soul Drippin' is one of my favorites. Can you tell us about the Mods when each of you were in the band and why you think the Mods never achieved greater national prominence? Let's start with Mike, then Quint, you can answer, and then Jerry.
Hello. I don't know if I'm the best one to start with because I came in a little bit later, but as far as I remember, Jimmy, in the midst of his success, and he had to come home and take care of his mother, I think. And maybe right. Quint or Jerry could expound on that a little bit.
You know, he was out in L.A., and he had come back to Chicago to take care of his mom and sort of put his career on hold. And I think it was, what, about 1999. He decided that his mother had passed away, and he decided he was going to get back into it. And I think there was a Cellar reunion.
That's correct.
That really got him going. He contacted Jerry. Jerry and I got reacquainted after a lot of years. He asked me to put the horn section together, which I did. Mike Flynn came back in and put the rest of the rhythm section together. And 10 years later, we had done a ton of shows, House of Blues, Ravinia. We recorded two albums,
right.
Soul Attitude and Soldier On. And it was a nice ride. But I would, and the guys could chime in here, I would say the biggest problem was the logistics of keeping a 10-piece band on the road. It was pretty difficult.
Yes, it was.
That's a big van.
It was a big band, but it was
a big sound.
Big sound.
No, I said big van.
Oh, van.
Big
van.
A big van.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, it was an Airstream, a vintage Airstream, and we all fit into that.
We locked Quint in the back. You know, he was supposed to ride there, but we had to put him back there.
Who'd you rope up on the roof?
We put Jimmy up on the roof.
Well, I got another question. This one's from Mike Flynn. Aside from the Mods and Dinosaur Exhibit, what are some of the bands you've played in?
Oh, wow. My brother and I have been part of the Chicago scene for a very long time. I've had the honor to play with Buddy Guy, Lonnie Brooks. My brother and I were in Bo Diddley's band for a stint there.
Oh, my.
We've either played with or opened with so many countless acts. Kansas, Deep Purple, Grand Funk, the Allman Brothers, Steve Miller, Canned Heat, UFO, 10 years after, CCR, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And then in the early 90s, I was a part of the China Club band that led to a couple of offshoots there.
That's a nice resume, Mike.
Really?
Yeah. Talking about name dropping.
Yeah, really.
You know? I kept it as short as I could.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Reasons. So, I mean, as a guitar player, who has influenced you over the years?
My first one I remember being a younger guitar player was Alvin Lee, and 10 years after there was a TV clip of them playing at Woodstock, and my mind just exploded. And shortly after that, I think I was watching the Midnight Special, and it was John McLaughlin and Mahavishnu, and Jerry Goodman was there, and my universe just expanded to where I said, what is this? And what was fascinating to me, and I didn't know at that time, as I was living in Evanston on Forest View, very quiet, calm street, and across the street was this house, and in and out were coming musicians, all these characters, Fringe, Lace, VWs painted as American flags, and it was the Flock. So I was living directly across the street from the Flock.
This is interesting because years later, I went into the business side of music, and I was a sales representative for Command Corporation. They owned Trace Elliott, Ovation Guitars, and Takamine. And Mike and his brother Pete owned the Flynn Guitars in Evanston. I walked in there in 1988, 89, introduced myself, and they go, "We know who you are." "You do?" "Yeah, we were like 8 or 9 years old. We used to come over and watch you guys rehearse." And here I am, years later, playing with this guy. It just keeps going around and around.
We were actually more around 10 or 12. Yeah.
10 or 12. Yeah. Right. You were young for your age.
That is, the stories you guys have are just amazing. Really? It's just amazing.
Really. Well, I know that, Mike, you also got deeply into prog rock. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely.
So,
I still am, yeah.
For a song selection, we're going to play one of your influences, King Crimson. The band's 1969 debut LP had one of the most recognizable and strange covers on it. But the band's leader is guitar genius and eccentric Robert Fripp. So here is an edited version of the song 20th Century Schizoid Man.
We've already talked about the Flock and the Mods. Now there's another band that you guys were all part of is Aura. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, Aura started out as 4 days and a night. They were a very popular band, very popular horn band. And they changed the name to Giant City around 1970. When the Flock disbanded at the end of 1970, I got a call from the drummer of Giant City, Denny Horan, who was the original Mods drummer. Mm-hmm. And he said, "We're playing out at Barnaby's. down on Rush Street. We'd like you to come out. I want you to meet everybody and see what we're doing. I was blown away. The lead singer, Al Lathan, from 4 Days a Night, was phenomenal. I joined the band. We were Giant City. We signed to Mercury Records, and where I met my wife, who we're still together after 48 years, which is pretty interesting. but they wanted us to change the name. We changed it to Aura. We released the album, and unfortunately, we did not have support for a tour, and it just kind of fizzled out. Years later, many, many years later, after the Mods, I decided that I wanted to relearn the Aura bass parts that I was playing, because I thought I played well. I started picking up the bass, and I decided this would be really great if we could put Aura back together again. And I got a hold of Al Lathan, and Quint and Mike and George Barr, who was the original trumpet player from Aura. And unfortunately, Al passed away suddenly. And from there, we decided, let's just keep the band together, and we changed the name. And that was Mike's idea.
Right, because at that stage, we had put in a lot of time and energy, and I said, wait a minute, we have several members from the Mods, Aura, and the Flock here. Why don't we form so-called supergroup? And it became Dinosaur Exhibit.
Well, you guys are awesome. I've seen you, twice now, and you just blow me away.
Oh, thank you.
And especially when you jump off the stage, Jerry, and do the splits. That's pretty cool.
Oh, painful, but I have to do it.
You have to do it. That close is
great. I can't even walk off stage.
Yeah.
Why don't we listen to an Aura song?
You've been listening to their classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, 101.5 FM. Please stay tuned for part 2.